Hello. Can we start? Good morning, everybody. Let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody to the meeting. We have a number of organizations that we have invited to the workshop. It's going to be a 3-day workshop. I will further explain what it is all about when we have done the introduction. I will start by introducing myself. I am Nozabelo Ruth Bengu. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Small Business and Cooperative Development. And I will ask members first to introduce themselves, and then we come to the facilitators and the support staff, and then the invited. And the before the invited guests will also have introduction by the acting DG of the staff.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Hendra Kruger. I'm a member of the Small Business Development Committee in Parliament, and I'm representing the DA. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Toby Chance. I'm also a member of the Portfolio Committee, on Small Business Development, representing the DA from Gauteng.
Dumelang kaofela bana beso, ke moruti mishwe, ke loko la komiti ena, represent the HDP.
We have asked to be assisted by the Project Office of Parliament. And next to me is Mr. Mzua Kengwane, who will introduce himself and then the rest of the team that is going to be with us as facilitators of the workshop.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Mzua Kengwane. I'm coming from the Project Management Office here in Parliament, situated at on the 8th floor in Nike Plain Building. And on my right, I've got my two colleagues that will be also participating in this workshop. I've got Malusi Dolo is my colleague in the same. We come from the same office, and also I've got Mandisa Tabai Ndala Tabai. She'll also be participating on the Mandisa will be participating. Will be running the show on the third day. Malusi Dolo will be facilitating on the second day, which is tomorrow. And I've also got Sylvia Sibia from the office, also as our observer in this workshop. Thank you very much.
Can we move to the department? At UPG.
Morning, honourable members. My name is Lindobo Shemkuma. I'm currently the acting DG Department of Small Business Development. I'm with my colleagues. On my right is Mr. Vukile Nkabinde. He's responsible for informal businesses in the department. And then we have Mr. Nuko Manyelo. He's a PLO from the ministry. And then behind me is Mr. Lusapho Njeni from SIDA. And then I have Vuyelwa Machilita from SIFA, and Rian Kuse from SIFA. And then we have Hulan Tulare, responsible for incentives and grants from Department of Small Business Development. And then we have Patricia Langa, the last one, from the Office of the DG, Department of Small Business.
Can we have our support staff?
Thank you, Chair. My name is King Unene, the Committee Secretary for Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. Then over that side at the corner there, it's Mr. Kolisile Mtaji, who is the Content Advisor for Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. And then next to me, I've got Nomtazi Tresha, who is the Executive Secretary to the Chairperson of the Small, both the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. And then far right, the one that is working, modeling, it's Ms. Nola Chobotwana, who is the Committee Assistant for Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. So that's the support staff for the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will then move to our invited guests, starting with Itala. Go that way and then up this way.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nkosinathi Ntlangulela. I'm the acting properties executive for Itala Development Finance Corporation. On my right is Mr. Manu Mutisami, the acting business finance executive for Itala Development Finance Corporation. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chairperson. My name is Patrick Mnesi. I'm PRO of Gauteng Province Industrial Park Association, Habiba. I'm from Orlando West, Soweto. Thanks.
Morning, everyone. My name is Peter Baloyi from Orlando West Industrial Park Association in Orlando, Soweto.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mary Dolamo from Udo Soweto. I'm the secretary for secondary cooperation.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Harriet Nkosi from Ukwazileto Secondary Cooperative, which is based in Gauteng. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, everybody. I am Andy Lamazwai from the National Stockfiles Association of South Africa. I'm here with my colleague Unam Samazwai, but she's not my wife, nor is she my daughter or my sister. She's my family. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members and all colleagues, my name is Ken Simon Tendi. I'm from the National Development Agency. I'll soon be joined by my CEO, Dr. Vuyelwa Ntlapo.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Muila Chirufia, and I'm from Zambia. Just came here to get a few ideas and know how things are planned here and take that information back with me. Sorry?
Volume.
I came here to get an understanding of how things are done here and get a few ideas and take them back with me to Zambia. I'm here on a visit. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. I'm Triple Combo and I'm here to drop shadow. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Nonto Enteng Kunu from Ezuleni Chocolates. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Musa Komo from Green Valley Eggs. Thanks.
Good morning, Madam Chair and everybody. My name is Mishinga Sayuba Kombo. I'm representing Pick and Pay Supplier Development. I'm here with my daughter, Chiko Kombo, who is in grade 11 and works shadowing today. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Domikaya Nonuva. I'm from Rising Funds. Thank you.
Thank you. We will allow the minister to settle. Once she's settled down, we will then take apologies.
Thank you, Chair. I have received the apology of the Deputy Minister of Small Business Development, the apology of Honorable Mabasa, apology of Honorable Mlawuti, who is gone with the PC on transport for oversight, Honorable Mwabe, who is also gone with the PC on public services, Honorable Ramukwasi, who is gone with the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, Honorable Bewa, who is gone with the PC on tourism. And then I've got an apology of Ms. Honorable November, who is going to join us if she missed the flight from Kimberley. Then I've got an apology that I also received from the Group CEO of Itala Bank, Ms. Yvonne Swan. She is ill, hence she is being represented by the people from Itala Bank. And then I'd also like to extend an apology of King of Midlands. They missed a flight yesterday, so they are going to join us later. Got a flight for today. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the minister has settled now. Can introduce herself.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Lindiwe Zulu. I'm the Minister of Small Business Development and Cooperatives. The weather is horrendous out there.
Okay.
we have called this workshop after I have done the introduction and the purpose or the context of the workshop and proceeding guidelines. I will give an opportunity to the minister to explain again the mandate of the department. Even if it is not in a presentation, but because it seems that. So I will start by explaining why we are here today. Slide number two. No, before we go to slide number two, can we go back? Yeah, this workshop is a workshop organized by the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. So we are going to insert a small business and cooperative development. The workshop is about an access to funding for small businesses and cooperatives. We are going to be talking about that. And I want to explain that we are not going to be pointing a finger. It is a workshop, it's not a meeting where the department is accounting to the portfolio committee. Even the questions and the comments that are going to be coming from members of the portfolio committee are not the kind of questions that we would normally ask when we are holding the department accountable or any structure that works with the department. The purpose for this is that what has informed this workshop, the portfolio committee to have this workshop, is that since our establishment, we have been engaging with various structures and entities like the organized structures that are representing businesses, small businesses and cooperatives. We have also on our own gone out to communities and visited cooperatives and SMMEs, and also interacted with provincial structures and local government structures. We have also received presentations from DFI, the department, the strategic plan of the department, the strategic plan of entities that are working with the department and providing services, financial and non-financial services. And in those engagements, we have observed as a portfolio committee that there seems to be mismatch, if I were to say, a mismatch in relation to what the SMMEs and cooperatives are saying they need as services from what is currently being provided. And we want to engage on those issues to begin to say, how do we facilitate a situation where there won't be a mismatch? But also, how do we facilitate a situation that would enable the department to effectively develop SMMEs and cooperatives in order to reduce poverty, unemployment and inequalities. And there are set targets on a number of areas. Like we know that there is a set target for the number of jobs that need to be created by 2030. And the 11 million more jobs, 90% of that has to come from small businesses and cooperatives. There are also targets that are related to access to markets, which is 30% procurement from SMMEs and cooperatives, and 70% local procurement, meaning that a replacement of imported goods with locally produced goods. So those are the targets that we are talking about. So then the purpose of this workshop is to assess the relevance of the funding model and funding products offered to small businesses and cooperatives by the Department of Small Business Development and the Development of Financial Institutes of the ANC government, which were established to fund small businesses and cooperatives. Also, we are here to give an opportunity for small businesses and cooperatives to share their experiences of applying for funding from our DFI. That is why in our program you will see that as opposed to seeing the department and DFI making presentations, it's the other way around. It's the people who are going to be sharing their experiences as small businesses and cooperatives on how they are serviced by the instruments that we have. We are also going to share with the department what small business and cooperatives are saying to the portfolio committee on small business development. When we say that we are saying as a portfolio committee, there is also information that we have gathered on our own. Small businesses and cooperatives are talking to us. And we want to give the department and the DFI an opportunity of looking at us as a mirror. The portfolio committee today is a mirror. You are standing in front of the mirror and you are looking at yourself. Because what is going to be said by the portfolio committee is what is said by SMMEs and cooperatives that we have interacted with throughout the country. And then this workshop to you as a department is like you are standing in front of a mirror. You are looking at yourself. And we all know that when you stand in front of a mirror, you will see, if you are putting a makeup, you will see areas that are not well covered by the makeup. And you will correct that. If you stand in front of the mirror and you see that your hair is not well combed, you take the comb and comb your hair. So this workshop is about that. It is giving an opportunity to the department and the DFI. So I want to emphasize this, that don't defend anything that you are doing. Don't try to do that. Listen to what people are saying and take this workshop as a mirror. You are being given an opportunity of getting a feedback. This is a workshop of the portfolio committee giving the department a feedback and its DFI of how you impact on your constituency. It's a great opportunity. So we are here to give the department and the DFI a feedback opportunity of hearing and understanding. We are saying, look at yourself from the mirror, from the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. What are the views of the target groups and the Portfolio Committee about financial services offered by the department and the DFI? Today it is us talking to you, and we are saying our views. Nasekhaya, when you prepare a meal, you cook food, you taste it, and you think everybody is going to be satisfied. Because to you it tastes well. And then you dish the food. And after people have eaten, sometimes you see some of them not even finishing the dish. They take two spoons and stop eating. And you wonder what is happening, because who has cooked the food? Taste of the food and think that it's a very nice food. It's a nice meal. It's only when you get a feedback from them, because you were not cooking this food for yourself, you were cooking the food to feed other people. It's only when you get a feedback from them that you must actually say, yes, it's a nice food. You should not be misled by your own taste. But this food is not for you. You have prepared it for other people to eat. Wait until they tell you that this food was nice. Then you can walk proudly and say, I'm a good cook. We are here to hear about the impact of the behavior of officials employed by DFI on the clients of DFI, who are the target group of the Department of Small Business Development. You see, problem here is that in some situations it is not the department that is in contact with the client, with the target group. It is the DFIs and the intermediaries. And the officials there behave in a particular manner that either portrays the department as a non-caring department or portrays the department as a caring department. Whatever is done by a DFI and an intermediary does not necessarily impact on that DFI and intermediary. It impacts on the department. So there are stories here about how the foot soldiers of the department are actually behaving and impacting on the people that are actually the clients of the department. Because CIFA doesn't have a client. The client is the client of the department, because the money that CIFA uses and CIDA uses and whichever support service uses is not your money. Your successes are the successes of the department. You exist because there is a department. If there was no department, you would not exist. You also exist because there is a target group. If there was no target group, you would not exist. Therefore, it is important to understand how you behave. They are also giving you an opportunity to hear that this is how your behavior impacts on the people that you are supposed to be developing. If you impact positively, they will say so. And if you impact negatively, they will say so. I want to give the Department of Small Business Development an opportunity of identifying changes that need to be effected by the department to make its financial services more relevant to felt needs of small businesses and cooperatives. We don't believe that it is the board of the SIFA that has to decide on changes that need to be made. We also don't believe that it is the board of SIDA that has to decide on changes. The department must decide on what changes that need to be made. And then the board governs that and make sure that it is implemented. But the observation is that in most cases, that is why we sent back SIFA, we sent back SIDA, we sent back all the entities who came to us to present strategic plans that had not been discussed with the department, that were not aligned with the department. It was precisely on that it is the department, everything starts with the what does this government during this 5-10 administration want to achieve? And what is it that will be done? Is given to the Department of Small Business to achieve in the 5 years of this administration of the government. Then the department would share that information with each entity to say, in terms of non-financial services, this is what we want to do as a department. And therefore, as SIDA, align your stress plan to our stress plan. The department again will say, this is what we want to achieve. These are the issues that we want to address in terms of financial services. Therefore, SIFA or any other DFI that provides money, financial support to small businesses and cooperatives would then align those services to what the department wants to achieve. But the department itself will not be able to develop a strategy like having not engaged with the clients and understand what their needs are and then design the financial services to address those felt needs. It can't be that the services will be perceived needs. The services should be responding to felt needs. We should not be designing services based on what we perceive to be a need of an SME and a cooperative. We should be designing services on felt needs. We are responding to the felt needs. We are not perceiving the needs because we are not talking to objects. We are talking to people that have got minds of their own. So those people know what they want. They know what their needs are. And the services then should speak to those needs. That is what we are doing. The next slide. Why we decided on this workshop is because the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development wants the department and its DFIs to provide financial services that address the self needs of the target group of the Department of Small Business. Small businesses and cooperatives are saying to the Portfolio Committee there is a lack of access to finance for them. That is what they are saying. They put it in different ways. Some are saying it's not easy to access finance. Some are saying finance provided in a form of loans is too expensive. Some of them are saying we can't fill the application forms. They are too complicated for us. Some are saying your services are located too far from us. There are many things that they are saying.
The retail sector is saying small businesses and cooperatives who come to them with goods, with good products, fail to meet the demand of the retail sector due to lack of adequate funding and government red tape. We have had Pick and Pay here. We have had Woolworths. We have had Massmart. They are all saying one and the same thing. We want to buy when we give a contract to a small business. They fail to meet the demand in terms of the volumes that you want, as well as in terms of meeting the deadline, delivering at the time when we want. And they are saying, we can't keep our shelves empty because we are waiting for the government to move slowly. The board that needs to decide on funding every 2 months. The board meets twice in a quarter, or the board meets after every 2 months. When, if I go to the bank and apply, the bank will not say the board will meet in 2 months' time, commercial bank. Applications are processed as they come in. But with the DFIs, the board will meet 4 times a year. The board will meet once in 2 months. The board meets in 1 month. And then when somebody is sick, is in hospital, the document doesn't get signed. When an official is on study leave, the document doesn't get signed. When an official is attending a conference, document doesn't get signed. I don't know how it works, because in the business world, there is no shop or a section in a shop that will close because the person who is responsible for that department is on maternity leave or is attending a workshop. Go to any shop, go to Edgar's, to work, any shop. You will not enter into a private sector and be told that there is something that could not be done because a person responsible for that is on leave. It's only in government. It's only in government where an invoice of an SMME and a cooperative will not be processed because the official is on leave or is on study group or is on study leave or whatever, attending a workshop or a conference. Which means, in government, when an official is away, the office closes. In the private sector, it doesn't happen. I work in private sector. I work in sales house. There was not a single day where we would be told that, that department, if it is a men's wear or a children's wear department, there is nothing that is going to happen today because the person who runs that department is off. But we have received letters from SMMEs and cooperatives complaining about invoices that are not processed, and the answer given for not processing an invoice, I'm just making an example, is that so-and-so is on leave. Same situation applies when they have applied for funding. They would be told that, no, your application it cannot be processed because so-and-so is on leave. Some of the allegations against DFIs
Application processes are complicated and take very long to approve, resulting with applicants losing business opportunities. We have a lady here that was giving a Pick and Pay spoke about her as well as Woolworths, and she was given an opportunity to supply. She produces chocolate and she lost that opportunity due to the red tape and slow pace in processing application for funding. It was also said that there is inadequate funding. Inadequate funding is offered to food processing businesses. Food processing businesses are saying you are not offering adequate funding to them. But then they are also saying you are not funding, no funding is offered to primary food production. Yet food processing businesses depend on primary food production businesses. So it doesn't make sense. Gauthier, how would a food processing business be funded when the primary food producer is not funded? How is then this food that has to be processed, if it is tomato sauce that is going to be made, how is tomato sauce going to be made when the raw material that you need to make tomato sauce is tomatoes and you are not funding tomatoes? You are not funding a cooperative that wants to grow tomatoes. You are only funding a cooperative or an SMME that is manufacturing tomato sauce. They are also saying that when they come to you with their applications, DFIs, you disapprove applications in the same way as commercial banks do. You don't disapprove and say, we are referring you to this door. Go to this door. They will assist you to improve your business plan. Because it's a developmental DFI, it's not a commission, it's a developmental. So you have found the mistake that makes it not possible for you to fund, but you are then disapproving and not assisting this person to improve. That is what they are saying. There's a complaint about FIFA, who uses intermediaries who charge very high interest rates on loans between 42% and 110%, which makes them a cost on production very high, and then makes it impossible to apply, to compete in a country that has got a procurement system that gives 90% or 90 points for low price and only 10 points for development. So both the financing is locking the door, as well as the procurement system is locking the door. So there are two master padlocks that are closing the door for SMMEs and corporate. It's them that are saying that. And so now we're here because we live, we represent those people, we are public representatives. The next slide. They are saying most of the financial support services are designed for businesses that have been running for 3 years. Niti abaletama financial statement for 3 years. Business startup finance does not cover operational costs.
a grant funding for cooperatives is a one-size-fits-all, and it is called an incentive when it is not. The 350,000 can't be an incentive. An incentive is what is given for choosing to invest in a particular area. That is an incentive. It's usually given by a municipality. We will not charge you. We will reduce your rates because you have invested in our area. We will reduce your tariff for electricity. We won't charge you this and this and this. Or we will provide you, we have buildings in this municipality that are not occupied. We are going to give those buildings to you rent-free because we want you to invest and create jobs. That is an incentive. A grant, when you give a person money, you can't call it an incentive, it's a grant. So the 350,000 given to cooperatives cannot be called an incentive. DFIs do not hold their clients by hand to enable them manage their finances efficiently. Instead, they are punished by DFIs for lack of business management skills. That's what they are saying. Akuna muntu kuma DFIs ozivitha lama projects ayobabamba ngesandla. Hold them by hand. And discover that the manner in which they are spending their money means that they cannot distinguish between the money that belongs to the business and the money that belongs to the person who owns the business. They think that the money that comes to the business, because the business belongs to me, is all mine. They take this money, go buy the car, instead of recapitalizing the business. And the reason for that, the DFIs don't hold them by hand. They are saying officials in DFIs treat small businesses and cooperatives as if they are doing them a favor. Nikuluma na busengathi yibo abazo ngithini bazocela. You don't talk to them as like without them you would not exist. It is as if you would exist even if they were not there. They are saying officials in DFI steal good business plans and give them to their relatives and friends. Remember, it's an allegation. It's not something that we have investigated, but some of them are saying so, that, I applied and I was told that my plan cannot be, it's not financially viable, I cannot be funded. But then, 6 months later, I saw so-and-so who was related to that official implementing my plan. The next slide. What we are beginning to pick up is that out there, people are still talking about DPI. They have not seen any distinction between services that are provided by DPI and services that are provided by the Department of Small Business Development. Based
also no awareness at community level about the migration process of financial support services from DTI. So, when people talk about SEFA, they say SEFA DTI. And I must say, I am as confused as the people out there. Particularly after organizing this workshop and inviting SEFA to come here and then receiving a letter from the Minister of Finance wherein he said if SEFA would come with IGC, because SEFA is a subsidiary of IGC, and also SEFA would come with economic development. So I'm confused, I don't know. Maybe this workshop will again clarify that. Some people are saying the referral system between different departments of government. If a person comes to small business and then the service is in with another department, they are saying it's cumbersome and it frustrates. They are saying also funding products are located in different DFIs and NGOs who are also located in different offices away from each other and communities that they serve. Let me make an example of Pietermaritzburg. In Pietermaritzburg, Shawen is at Berger Street. Cedar is at Chapel Street. The LED office of Mishinduzi Municipality is at the corner of Church and Long Market Street. I don't know whether there is a SEFA office in Pietermaritzburg. Shawen falls under small business, is in Berger Street. Cedar falls under small business, is in Chapel Street. A person who comes from a community would go to a councillor, and the councillor will say, follow me to the municipality. I will take you to the LED office. They will tell you where to get those services. And the councillor will take a member of the community to offices of the council that are at the corner of Long Market Street and commission between Church, Long Market, Church Street, and then commission. Right there you'll find offices of the municipality. And incoming transport comes through Long Market that comes from the Edenville side. And the incoming transport that comes from the northern areas comes through Church Street. So the municipality is located where it is easy to access. But the offices of Shawen are three streets away from the local municipality. And the offices of Cedar are three streets but at Chapel. So there is no public transport that is going there. So this person must walk down commercial and walk up back to collect Chapel to get to SEFA, to SEFA offices. This umama no ubelethinga nomhlane usuka emali nekhansela nizomkhombisa ama offices e LED. Because lo mama lo wants to apply for a project that is going to develop the local economy. It's local economic development. Their proposal is local economic development. So the first call is the local economic development office. But my figure of our local economic development office, those services are not there. Kutu agaye kwa Sawen. No, I think Sawen, I'm telling the city. But for training, go to Sida. Fanelani unge. That's how we are structured. The next slide. What are we going to do in the 3 days workshop? We are going to talk and share the South African experience on funding small businesses and cooperatives, including one, what have we done in the past 20 years to develop? Don't think of the department as having been established as a department, because the department inherited a function that has always been there over the past 20 years. So when we look at what we have been doing, we must look at what we have done in the past 20 years. And we also look at what impact has been made by funding to small businesses and cooperatives, particularly on tribute challenges. We have pumped in money to small businesses. Let us then today, again, stand in front of the mirror and look at the impact that funding has made to small businesses and cooperatives for them to reduce poverty, unemployment, and inequalities. The third issue that we are going to be doing is, what gaps are we identifying that prevent us from making an impact on tribute challenges? We are pumping money. Let us stop and reflect and say, what are these gaps? What impact have we made? Have we made any changes? And what are the gaps are we identifying that prevent us from making an impact on tribute challenges? If the poor askale, it's again, and do this, were we going to do it in the same way that we have been doing it for the past 20 years? Or there are areas that we would change? And let us just be honest, because here we are not in a meeting of accounting to the portfolio committee. We are talking here. We want to find solutions. Then at the end, we must identify changes that we need to do in order for us to make an impact on tribute challenges. If we have been funding in a way that has not yet made any big impact, yes, impact has been made, but it is an impact that does not tell us that we can meet the target of creating 761,000 jobs per year if you divide 9.9 by 13 years. Because 2015 or 2016, upelile manje. So we are talking about 2016-2017. So from 2016 to 2017 financial year, for you to get to 2030, you are left with 13 years. So divide 9.9 million by 13 years, you get 761,000 jobs that you must create per year. That is what needs to happen. What changes we need to do in order for us to create those jobs? How should we be funding SMEs and cooperatives in a manner that will enable them to create 761,000 jobs per year, for us to meet the target of 9.9 million jobs by 2030. That is what we are here to do today. So, my appeal is that when we are talking about these issues, let's focus more on identifying the gaps and the changes. Let us identify the gaps and the changes that need to be effected, as opposed to justifying why we are funding in this particular manner. When we have identified the gaps and the changes that need to be made, we will then, at a later stage, look at whether there is a need to change any particular act in order to effect the changes. Whether there is a need to change any particular way in which we are structured in order to effect the changes. Whether there is a need to establish anything that is not existing at the moment, which is required in order for us to do what is expected of us to do. So that is what we are here to do today. Honorable Chance.
Thank you, Chair, for those introductory words. In my opinion, there is a glaring gap in this program, which is that we have no representation at all from the private sector banks or financial institutions. And I do not see how it is at all, even remotely possible, for us to consider effective solutions for small business funding, which doesn't take into account the sector which provides the bulk of the funding in this country. You know, the DFIs are minuscule in terms of the overall amount of money available to banks, to small businesses. And many of the criticisms and complaints that we get from small business are the inability of small businesses to raise money, borrow money from banks. And I do think, Chair, that we've lost an opportunity here. And I'd like to understand your reasoning, or the committee's, the management of the committee, for excluding this important sector in this discussion.
The workshop is looking at the funding instruments of the government, not the private sector. We may have a follow-up to deal with the private sector, but it was arranged to say, let us look at ourselves, because we have our own instruments of funding. Let us deal with that first. Sweep your own house before you can see that there is debt in the neighbor's house that you need to sweep. Honorable Chance?
I beg to differ, Chairperson. It's like having a workshop on marriage and only women being in the workshop. I mean, finance, you know, how can you have a discussion around finance where, you know, we have a vast need for bringing all resources together, for bringing business and government closer together. It just, to me, is again inconceivable, and I really think that we have to get away from this notion that government works in one way and the private sector and business works in another way. The world doesn't operate.
Can I correct you in what you are saying? There's no one who is saying that. I am saying today we are focusing on services that have been given to those people that we have invited by government. That is what we are dealing with today. We are not saying we are not going to be engaging with the private sector. The sector that we had engaged with the retail sector, and the retail sector has not complained about the commercial funding. The retail sector has complained about government funding. And that is what we are trying to sort out at this moment.
Madam Chair, you used the example of putting up makeup, and I just want to use this opportunity to ask CISA, and I can't remember what was that lady's name that you know, was in this committee, asked for funds from CISA, from Middleburg, you know, on the engineering side. So I would like just to ask CISA now, how far is that proposal? Because it will give us a good idea of how they operate. Thank you.
We will do that when we are engaging.
That's what we are going to be doing here. We are going to talk about our own experiences of what people are raising in engaging the DFIs that are here. Can we then give the opportunity to the minister to remind us what the mandate of the department is?
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, it's an honor for us to be here as the ministry and the department. And we would like to further thank the portfolio committee for this opportunity for the DFIs that are relevant to government to get the opportunity to listen to present, because my view is that they are expected to be presenting in this workshop. Secondly, I'd like to upfront say, Chairperson, I will not be able to participate in the workshop throughout the days because we are preparing for a government Lekgotla, which is preceded by the Lekgotla of the African National Congress. I did, though, take the opportunity to be at least here today so that I can be here the first day, but I have to leave in the evening, the late afternoon, to go back to Pretoria. I think the presentation that you made, Chairperson, as a basis for having this workshop is exactly the reason why we have the Department of Small and Medium Enterprises, because the questions that you were raising there as questions that are asked by small and medium enterprises and cooperatives are exactly the reason for our existence, and the fact that we need to give answers to the questions that you so articulated well from the small and medium enterprises themselves. Our mandate really is to ensure that we develop programs and effective mechanisms that will assist small and medium enterprises to grow. You'll recall from the very beginning when we started here, we said our reason for existence is to try and upscale our support for small and medium enterprises through various means which will relate to creating a conducive environment for them to thrive. Not that we would do the business, I mean we would do the job ourselves, but it's for us to create a conducive environment for small and medium enterprises. But also our role is to ensure that there are coordinated efforts in this support, because the year that we have been in office it has become very clear to us that the flood of requests that come to head office, many of which are requests in my view that are supposed to be going to local economic development structures as well as provincial economic structures. But today, because we also have FDIs, the floods of requests that we get in the department, many of which in my view should be able to go directly to the DFIs so that they can be speedily assisted. But in the year that I've been in the office, I've realized that one of the challenges we have is really a coordinated effort towards supporting small and medium enterprises as well as cooperatives. In the year that I've been in office, because part of what we need to do is to enhance the support that we give to SMEs, co-ops, and not forgetting informal business, because many a times we talk about small and medium enterprises and that angle of informal business seems to disappear somewhere along the line. And now that we're also talking to FDIs, my experience in the year, I found that the informal sector is struggling terribly, because if you look at the support that the informal sector is looking for, they're looking for proper infrastructure in the areas where they are operating, they're looking for training, they're looking for all the other things that other people are looking for, but the chances for them to even get to our department, get to local economic structures, get to provincial economic structures is a mountain to climb for them. So I think part of what needs to happen here is the discussion about how do we reach those that are furthest from telephone, furthest from emails and so forth. How do we help them? But how do we also ensure that there is a coordinated effort? Because again, in the years' experience and the travels that one has done in the country, one has realized that a lot of people at local level on small and medium enterprises and cooperatives, they end up having to call the national office simply because they don't know where to go to, even at a local level where they should be able to know where they're supposed to go to. And because there's not so much very good communication for them, they struggle. Our responsibility, obviously, is also to look at the legislation. And again, my experience in the year, the legislation is not just legislation that is at national level. You find the provinces also have to pass legislation. And the issue here, the experience in the year, is that legislation talking to each other. There's also the issues of regulation, and again I speak from practical experience of being in, on the ground. There are regulations that are passed by local structures, but many a times there's no enforcement. So our responsibility as a department is to make sure that what is regulated, where there's regulation, must be enforced through our engagement and discussions with local economic structures. But of course you can imagine the task, how difficult it is if you consider the fact as how many of those structures are we talking about. We do have, of course, coordination through our MINMEX and other relevant structures. But the issue here is we've only just been a year in office, and even the number of those meetings have not been as regular as we would love them to be. Not that they haven't been taking place, but of course there are many other meetings that we have to stretch ourselves into and make sure that the department and its mandate is understood at all levels of government. This is one of our biggest challenges at the moment, to make sure that the mandate and the purpose of having the Department of Small and Medium Enterprises is understood. Now, one of the issues that we would like to again put up front here is the fact that in one of our, well, not in one, in our presentations we have clearly said the programs that we are implementing were programs that we inherited from the Department of Trade and Industry. And we made it very clear from the very beginning that when a new department is being formed, we do not want to come in and fold all those programs that were there and throw them away on the basis that we are just a new department. We said, let us continue with those programs, particularly because there were many people of small and medium enterprises who were already in the pipeline of support. Some were in the beginning, some were in the middle, some were towards the end. And therefore we said we'll continue to support those programs, but however, we also indicated that we'll take time to review those programs, because we believed that some of the programs, the Department of Trade and Industry itself had done a review of some of those programs, and they were able to indicate that some were effective, some were not so effective. So we will embark on that evaluation of the programs that we have, and the process will also include, of course, we will invite the portfolio committee so that we can be able to work together and make sure that as we review these programs, because at the end of the day we need to make sure that we've got programs that are effective, programs that really address what the chairperson likes saying is felt needs of small and medium enterprises. And we are hopeful that by the time we finish that evaluation, which by the way will not exclude the FDIs that we are talking about today, and by the way will also not exclude our relationships with different entities, including the private sector, because in the year of office again, I've come to realize that quite a lot is being done by the private sector, particularly through the enterprise development programs. Quite a lot of money is being poured by the private sector, particularly in the areas of enterprise development, incubation, and a whole lot of those. But my view is that we need to engage further so that ultimately when we look at our own programs, which we would have reviewed, we'll have to know exactly who do we tap into in terms of the private sector, in terms of the academic space that we are finding ourselves in. And the private sector, in my view, also needs to look into their their enterprise development programs, because many of them are spending a lot of money, but when you look at the impact of where they're spending money, it might not necessarily be what it is supposed to do if we consider the role of small and medium enterprises in terms of growing and contributing towards the GDP and contributing towards poverty eradication or alleviation, whichever way we want to call it, inequality which is being faced by the country. So, Chairperson, with those words, I'm just saying we are working as fast and as hard as we possibly can to make sure that whatever work we do is properly coordinated. We need to close the gap between ourselves as government, but within ourselves as government, from local, provincial, and national structures. We need to close the gap. The gap is a little bit too big, in my opinion. We also need to close the gap between ourselves and the private sector. Hence, as a department, we are looking at developing, adding to the development of what already is being discussed at the level of other government structures in terms of how do you manage a public-private partnership so that ultimately it addresses the real challenges. And so the department is looking at developing proper guidelines that will assist us in that. I think we're doing the best that we can. It's not enough. We can still do much more than what we are doing. But we are moving towards ensuring that we have a coordinated approach to the work that we do. And I would also like, Chairperson, to say that in the year that we've been in office, we are still getting the kind of support we get from other departments, almost all the departments of government. But of course, even that is not as fast as we would like it to be. The bottom line is that if a government has taken a decision, for instance, of a 30% procurement, what does that mean, that procurement, in as far as all the government departments are concerned? But also, what does that mean when it comes to procurement, even in the private sector, and the opportunities that can be open for small and medium enterprises? Thank you, Chair.
I will now hand over to the facilitator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, colleagues and our visitors. I think it's come to the time where we need to start with our business of the day. And also before then we go through our agenda, what I would like to do is to just go through a few ground rules in terms of how we're going to be conducting the workshop today. Because we've been granted this or been given this opportunity to facilitate with my three colleagues as I introduced them previously. So I've got, I've got about five slides that I need to go through, but then slide number one. I would then not go through the sort of objective of the workshop because I think Madam Chair has covered that quite concisely and comprehensively, so I would not cover that. Let's go through to slide number two. The way the workshop, the way it's actually structured is about 3 days, and each day, on day one, it's covered by opening remarks and background from the Madam Chair, as she has done, and also we've done introduction and expectations, what we expect from this workshop. And and also process guidelines, what I'm doing right now, and also we're going to give opportunities to, an opportunity to the, for day one, to SMEs and cooperatives to give their experiences and perspectives in terms of the challenges that they are faced with, and communicate those to honorable members, the DSIs and the honorable minister as present today. And then after that, then we'll give an opportunity for honorable members and the House to sort of ask clarity-seeking questions. And on those two items, we'll allocate specific time as stipulated on the agenda. Okay, and the other item on the agenda for today is deliberations. We've also got recommendations, and we'll have closing remarks from Madam Chair this afternoon or this, whatever time we finish, if we do make sure that we manage the time accordingly. Myself, I'll be facilitating for today, for the rest of the day today, and for tomorrow, Mr. Malusi Dole, my colleague, will be taking over from me. And also agenda for tomorrow, opening remarks in the background, context of the workshop, presentation and clarification questions, deliberations, and also closing remarks from Madam Chair. Similar approach on day three. Also, there will be presentation and there will be deliberations and closing remarks. But also what I would like to just to outline so then we all understand the role and the function of the facilitators in this kind of a workshop. Our role is merely to facilitate the discussion, not to get involved in the actual discussions or the content of what is being discussed. It's to make sure that whatever the objective or the scope, we stay within the scope and we stay on track of the objectives of why this workshop, why we are having this workshop today. And also make sure that we facilitate the presentation, clarification questions. We also allow for deliberations and recommendations to be discussed. And also presentation and briefing notes. I believe, as my colleagues have briefed me yesterday when we had a meeting, that there were communication that was sent out to stakeholders. And stakeholders were requested then to come in to do presentation and share perspectives. And particularly from page 11, from page 10 to page 11, they were required to present, to just compile in the form of a presentation, a 15-minute discussion or presentation that the stakeholders will actually have to make. And also then after that 15 minutes, then we'll open up the floor for clarification questions. If I need to emphasize on what Madam Chair highlighted earlier was the fact that the kind of questions or the kind of discussions that will actually take place today are those discussions that will be sort of clarity seeking, discussions that will be looking at finding solutions, not the kind of questions that we usually have in committee meetings when we conduct oversight. It's trying to make sure that we stay within the mandate of this particular workshop today. And also the role of our facilitator is to make the process easy, lead the process, not get involved be a catalyst, keep the workshop on track, summarize key points, issues, and guide the group in coming to conclusions and clarity agreements and recommendations. That's basically in summary what we are here to do. Not to get involved in the discussions in any way or form, but just to make sure that we keep the discussions going and to make sure that all the presenters, all the people that are outlined on the agenda, all the stakeholders that are outlined on the agenda, they get an opportunity to come in front and present their case while they still like outside. Also, okay, part of the ground rules that we would like to put up front is that we share airtime. So we stay on track with the agenda to make sure that everyone gets an opportunity to present. We engage during, we would like to encourage engagement during deliberations. And also, having said that,
encouraging engagement during the deliberations. Let's try and hone in to the key points, to the key issues. Let's speak to the points, speak to the issues. But also what we would like to highlight is while this workshop is in session, we would like to highlight to the members that we, as facilitators, what we would like to apply is the rule of 2 feet, that you need not to request, if you need a leg stretch, request permission to go out. For our visitors also, you can just quietly walk out and don't disturb the proceedings and take your call if you like your leg stretch. And also what I would like to find out for our visitors that have not used the facilities in this particular building, you will advise during the course of this workshop the restrooms and the smoking areas. If you would like to get direction from that, we will get those directions and we'll come back and tell you exactly which areas you can use. Okay, and one last thing on our ground rules is that we would like to, as you can see our agenda the way it's structured, we've got 30 minutes for each presentation or for each discussion. We are proposing that you keep to 15 minutes for the presentations and allow for 15 minutes for clarity seeking questions. So then we give opportunity to everyone, to all the presenters that have been outlined on the agenda to get an opportunity to come on the podium and do presentations. I think that is my last slide. So before then I start with the business of today, on day one, if we open up our agenda or our program, we will see that the most part of the day is covered by, we'll hear presentations from the SMEs and the cooperatives. And at the latter part of the day, you'll get an opportunity to engage in deliberations and also recommendations. So, having said that, okay, one thing that I've picked up on the agenda is that we do not have a morning tea break. I would like to announce that we will allow for colleagues, honorable members and our visitors to go outside and grab a cup of coffee and come back so then we can continue with the workshop. We'll just make it a free flowing so then we try and catch up on time. Tea is ready outside, so if anyone would like to go grab a cup of coffee and come back and then we continue with the discussion. Okay. On that note, I would like to also, one last thing is, if also you look at the agenda or the program, as my colleague highlighted before on the apologies, on the slot that was supposed to be 11:45 to 12:15, which is Miss Cameron Turnbull from King of Midland, she's not in at the moment, but as soon as she comes in, we will try and slot her in on whatever slot that could be available later on in the day. So having said that, then we would like them to start with the first presentation of the day, and I would like to call on the podium Ms. Nontwentle Mkhulu, Managing Director of Ezulwini Chocolates. Please come to the podium and provide us with your perspective of Ezulwini Chocolates.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Minister and her absence, honourable members and all the colleagues, I greet you this morning. I am Nandu Ntle from Ezulwini Chocolates. Ezulwini Chocolates was established by myself in 2002, registered in 2003 when I actually turned 21. At the time, you still needed to wait until you turned 21 to have a business, a registered business. I established the business with the mission and the purpose of creating a world-class chocolate producing company, which is a 100% African chocolate. So that was the mission in setting the business. I obviously thought that was going to be a very easy process, making chocolate. How difficult can it get? Because I was already told that I was a good cook and had done some research in the chocolate industry. I have said that I had best chances to achieve all the success that I planned out or set out in the beginning. I come from a lineage of entrepreneurship. At home, my parents and my great-grandparents were entrepreneurs. And in that regard, I obviously thought that entrepreneurship comes, you know, it's in my DNA. Also, my family business had gone through some challenges in terms of funding by some of the DFIs. So I've learned some lessons from my family business. I've learned how to run the business. I worked with my father in the business. And following that, I also did some entrepreneurial training, which was at the Raymond Ackerman Academy. And then another peak was that I did an international training in chocolate making. I also, in the process, I did get some clients. Also, chocolate is a unique industry, so to say, because you don't find a lot of small, at the time you didn't find a lot of small business playing in that space. So it was an industry that was not saturated. I went into it with that mind. I'm young, I'm female, I'm committed, passionate and driven. So I always say I don't know a more committed and more passionate and driven entrepreneur. So with these ticks and with these boxes that I had thought these were ticked, I thought I had really best chances of succeeding in business. Next slide. Kodwa ngesiZulu kuthiwa kushaya idonsa kakhulu. In Zulu, in Zulu they say when you using cattle to plow, you actually hit the one that is pulling the hardest. So that has been my experience in starting the business and be brave enough to enter into an industry that was not previously was not charted. So I found that the support that is currently structured for entrepreneurs or for SMEs actually paints this picture. Next slide. Okay, I had a link that was supposed to play, but I couldn't play YouTube. It's actually a toddler. It's success in the making. It's a toddler, and just wanted to remind the house of what does it take for a toddler to walk. If you can just think how the toddler walks, if the toddler is learning to walk, everyone around him or her applauds her for taking a step and the next step, and when they fall, everyone cheers them to get up and try again. And this process goes on and on and on. until the toddler really forgets how they stumbled at some point and how they fell and hurt themselves, and they just walk without even thinking that they used to not know how to walk. And that's a culture, unfortunately, that currently in our ecosystem does not exist. Even just in a broader term of the culture, in South African business, it just does not exist. When you are an entrepreneur and you're brave enough to start something and try something, you're actually being punished when you make a mistake and fall. Everyone, they're called, even always from where I come from in the remote areas of KZN, in Gandla, people normally, when they look at a man who started a barber shop and then it closes, they go, "Oh, really?" So he fell. And nobody really celebrates the fact that the person was brave enough in starting something and being part of something big. So I think it's just looking at the broader picture of how do we look at failure as South Africans. Do we look at failure as a part of the process of developing a good idea, or as part of the journey, as part of growing up? Or we still look at it as the same as we used to? So in my experience, certain funding, and I felt like Madam Chair sort of picked a lot of things that I wanted to say from my presentation. When you source funding, you actually source funding. It feels like, those figures might not be clear, it feels like you're actually begging along the street. And the cars, when you think of beggars in the street, each car that approaches, you have as a beggar, you have this kind of hope that the next person who is going to roll down the window, they're actually going to give you something. Sometimes they shake their hands, their heads. Sometimes they think, "But why are you begging?" And look, so funding process becomes like that, like you are a street beggar. You're begging for finance, and people can, you know, do whatever they feel like doing. And the next picture, obviously, for security reasons, I couldn't put in a picture of somebody stripping, but also it feels like you, because there's information required, you basically strip yourself there in front of potential funders. They ask for this, you give them that, they ask for this, you give them that. And at the end of the day, they look at you, they shake, "Nah, we're not interested, we're not going to fund because of A, B, and C." Instead of upfront saying, "This is the kind of business that we fund, this is the kind of business that we don't even look at." Instead of, you use a lot of your valuable time in preparing documents that at the end of the day, nobody is really going to do anything about them. Also, the criteria really is not often quite clarified. The turnaround time, and even getting back to you with the simplest thing, it takes a long time. You wait, and it just becomes a tedious process. Post approval. I'm one of the few people that I got fund approved after a long time, the process of the begging process took about 22 months, just trying this one, because also getting right funding is important. It's like getting married to someone. You need to understand the terms and everything. So it took a long process getting the right, thinking that I'll get the right funders. And then when it actually they said, okay, the proposal, yes, we do. And then I actually, in my case, I'd ask for the contract, to see the contract as the first point of call, first month, that I want to know exactly what I'm getting myself into. Because, as I said earlier on, my family business had gone through a similar experience just before I started my own business. So I knew how, you know, how badly structured funding can do or can hamper a business. So, but that didn't happen. I got the contract just when I actually couldn't move anymore. I just needed the funds in. I signed the bad contract. I knew that, but I signed it anyway because I had everything waiting on the funds to get going. Then after the funds have been approved, then again there's approvals, submissions that you don't. Sometimes you don't even know what the person who wants you to submit the proposal, what do they really want? So you get the money approved, and then every second week, every month, you need to submit for money to be paid. And then in my case, there were so many delays that by the time that money came in, I'd missed so many deadlines. It just becomes a nightmare. I thank God that I didn't turn grey during the process. Business involvement, which sounds great on paper, but when GFI seek to be involved in the business, it better be somebody who understands the industry, who's got some knowledge of the industry that you operate in. Because sometimes people come in, they give you advice, and you try and listen to the person, and they really, really, really never even run a spaza shop themselves. And sometimes it feels like an insult to an entrepreneur if that person then tells you, you can't do this, you should be doing that. And then when you ask for the practicality of it, then you just can't find it. And when you seek to really understand the person's approach, and obviously because the person, whoever is in front of you, is holding the golden key, you've got to listen and you've got to do it according to their advice. So the lack of industry knowledge becomes a huge stumbling block. Lack of trust. And, you know, one of the things I felt like some entrepreneurs are actually treated worse than criminals. The treatment is more like you're going to get this money and you're going to run with it. So when you suggest things, and I, one of the things that I was very privileged to have was a lot of support that I've built over the years. So when I introduced that support to my funders, they didn't quite understand it, they didn't like it, they didn't trust it. And by the time they introduced their own support system, it was just a mess. And you couldn't really get to work with those people because it was just the trust element. And I don't know why. Maybe in my case it didn't seem very important, but I think if you were going to work with an entrepreneur, you need to work with people that can actually trust an entrepreneur and look at you and believe in you and believe that you are about the same mission. So that is kind of business support that is needed. And often you get the sense that the interest of the DFI, I hope nobody shows me on this one. The interest of the DFI is often far more important than the survival of an entrepreneur. And that becomes like each woman for herself. I couldn't say each man for himself. Each woman for herself. Because it just loses the element of being in a developmental institution. It is all about let's get the best out of this business and push you to the point where you really see that it's about the recovery of the DFI's funding rather than let's build together, let's make sure that you get to the goal. I have to rush. I actually could not. I saw that picture. It's unavoidable fact. That picture says stop complaining. It's the same distance. You players always pull the race card, and it's true. I mean, I lived in this province for 11 years. I recently moved back to KZN, and I must say it's good to do business in Zulu. This is very true. So when you're dealing, and in my case, it was very true, when you're dealing with DFI representatives that really talk to you in that context, it becomes very difficult to push the agenda forward. And also when you come to the retail space, it's exactly the same picture. Because we're dealing with giants that have been there for years, they've got all the tricks of buying, of doing this and processes, and you are running on a very tight budget, and everyone says the same distance. With all the support that you get, it still is, if your budget is very limited, that's the picture that becomes becomes true. I take this as a national economic war cry. Creating a vibrant environment for small businesses to succeed is everyone's business. I'm excited about this department, and to me it is giving me the hope, because the ecosystem currently is not properly established, that you can't, you know, there's, as Madam Chair was saying, support and funding is not really talking to each other. I am very hopeful that this department is going to be able to achieve that and help or assist small business to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mantwente, for that interesting and quite creative presentation that you've given us. But I think you've very well covered some of the challenges that the Madam Chair has highlighted. She highlighted on her opening statement. I think I like the analogy that you used of a toddler in terms of it talks to the mind shift that we need to look at failures in a different way. We need not to look at failures as something that needs to be celebrated. It's something that we need to provide, be it financial or non-financial support to our small businesses and cooperatives. And also, I appreciated all the challenges that you've outlined, the lack of trust between the funders and the SMEs, the lack of the payment delays, which put the SMEs and the cooperatives in a very difficult position, and they end up defaulting or end up losing some of the opportunities, and some of them actually going out of business. And also, if it's a non-financial support, the lack of industry knowledge, that support that you are given or the resources that you are given to support you, they need to have the industry background or the industry understanding of the business that you are working on. On that note, honourable member, honourable minister, and honourable members,
and our visitors, I would like to open up a floor for any clarity-seeking question for about 15 minutes. Please bear with me. It's not because I'll be rude if I cut you short. It's because we're trying to keep the time. The floor is open for any questions.
Thank you very much indeed. I came in a little bit late in your presentation, and so maybe I missed it, but I would just be interested to know what is the current status of your business.
The current state of my business, actually last year I had to close the manufacturing plant in Cape Town. I've recently moved back to KZN with the mission of relook at the business model. And also now, because I've realized that it's not just my business, it has to be, we need to create an industry that accommodates black and small businesses. So I'm in the process of working with the KZN government to relook at starting a chocolate and confectionery sector. I'm not sure if that's clear. It's quite broad. No.
Honorable Chair.
Thank you. I would like to know which DFIs did you approach? Because can you switch off your mic? Because we heard of you first little Pick and Pay, and secondly through Woolworths, and both of these retailers told us that your chocolate meets their standards, and they were actually disappointed that you could not get funding to meet their demands. Which DFI did you approach, and what was the response?
I approached almost all of them. I was assisted by DPI, but that assistance went up until the feasibility study. I was also assisted by CEDA for packaging, which was successful. My funding came through CIFA, which was because then they have subsidiaries or they are sourced to an organization called Enablers. That's the organization that I dealt with in Cape Town.
Honorable Kruger, followed by Honorable Moshe, and then Honorable Chan.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out why she will think that a business will be successful now in KwaZulu-Natal, and why did it fail in this province? Thank you.
One of the reasons, it is a tough one to say, okay, the funding one is one element. With the race card that I said, it is very true here. The support that I mean, when I spoke to the KZN government that I've just got is unbelievable. Looking at that, the KZN sugar industry is big. There's coffee being grown in KZN. There's opportunity to also, that we started looking into the KZN government of growing cocoa in KZN and growing the industry as a whole, like looking at the whole basket of what goes into chocolate and develop the value chain, because currently I went into chocolate to make chocolate, not to develop a value chain. Because what happens is then you need, as an entrepreneur who is a chocolate maker, you need to source the raw material, and then you suddenly find out, oh, we don't have that, or we don't have the right quality. Then you start looking at the right quality. So right now, my mission is to actually sort out the value chain, hopefully, by in the next 4 years' time, we'll have a healthy value chain to say, as an entrepreneur, if you want to make chocolate, where do you go for cocoa? Where do you go for milk, for the right milk, right quality milk? Where do you go for fruits? And where do you go for your sugar and all of those things that goes into making chocolate? So it's for me, it's more than one reason. And also, I think best support is really from home, because I am from KZN, so maybe that's another reason why I had to move.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, firstly, I must congratulate the young lady for her passion and for her courage and the spirit of not giving up. I have two questions for you. The first one, based on lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
You said sometimes you felt like you were treated worse than a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you give an example of what actually happens that makes you feel like you are treated
mm-hmm.
worse than a criminal,
mm-hmm.
so that if the culprit is here, they will know what to avoid in future?
Unfortunately, the culprit was not here, and I was generous enough to give the feedback. So when you say in the business, this is what the retailer needs, that you stipulate the requirements, and you stipulate, this is what the retailer will not take into their door, no matter if they like you or not. I mean, I had best support in retail, but when it comes to compliance, and so then there were delays, or the one thing happened is there was delay in finding and sorting out the factory that we'd set up. And so when I went back to the buyer at the time, actually, the pick and pay buyer said to me, we've got a product freeze for the next, I think it was 2 months, because of the internal issues. And then I went back to report this to the DFI, said this is what is happening. So for the next 2 months, we cannot take products into stores. And then the representative went behind me to verify the information, because they couldn't trust. They sort of assumed that there was just a delaying tactic of some sort. So there's many, many examples that you communicate the realities of the industry, and then they don't believe. They go and verify, or you hear somebody else saying, oh, by the way, so-and-so ask this and this about, which it then creates a very unsettling feeling about, because this is a very important relationship. I'm not saying don't verify, but there's a way, at least tell me that this is what you're going to do. So that's just one example.
My second question?
Okay.
My second question, you said when money was approved, every second week you were supposed to submit documentation. That kind of documentation where you expected to submit every second week, could you not negotiate that you given at least a month before you made submissions?
So there is a process where the funds are being dispersed, and you need to put in, say, oh, this week we're paying for the refrigeration. You put in new documentation for that refrigeration. So when the deal is being approved, everything that you're going to buy is submitted, and then another, so when then you have to actually pay the suppliers, you need again to put to hand in a report or a request rather of you going to buy that or pay for this. And then it takes 3-4 weeks before somebody gets back to you and says, oh no, you actually need to put the descriptions this way and that way. And then more time is being, you know, like more delays by the time, I mean, and also when, talking about the refrigeration, for me, because it was custom made, it ended up being moved, delayed for another 2.5 months. So all of those things, just because every second week you need to put in a new submission for approval.
Thank you, Chair. I'm still not quite 100% sure of the reasons why your business had to close down. So if you could just give us a bit more in detail about the contributing factors that led to the businesses closing down. And I also want to ask you, do you feel that the DFIs simply don't understand the way small business operates, and that they're too bureaucratic? They don't have an understanding of the flexibility required, the fact that decisions need to be taken on the fly? You know, is the sort of culture of running a small business something which the DFIs that you had contact with alien to them? And then the final question is, you made reference to the race card, and I'd like to understand where you encountered racism and what, again, negative effect that had on your business.
Okay. I just hope I'll remember all three. I made mention during my presentation that often I think also DFI representatives mean well, but they don't often raise people maybe who've never really run a business or don't understand that things they, I mean, one of my mentors said one day in business is actually 3 days. If you lose one day, you've lost 3 days in making a decision because somebody else has moved and then whatever. So it's often you get that sense that people don't really understand how small business or how business really works in a practical sense. So that's true. And the reason why I had to close my business, first of all, I realized it was the funding was not sufficient. I was doing a very high-end premium product that required a lot of input. And the money that I was soon running out, and the kind of structure that, the funding that was structured was not supportive of the business. And then I re-looked at my business model. I took reflections of things that I should have done better as an entrepreneur, and signals that I ignored. When I started the business, I said I wanted to create 100% African chocolate because it didn't make sense to get chocolate from West Africa and Madagascar to go to Europe and come back to South Africa. But then I didn't look at that value chain before I started the business. So now it is looking at getting cocoa directly from West Africa, directly from Madagascar, cheaper, and then processing it here. Because people that I compete with or shop, it's people that have direct access. And so when the buyer wants a good price, they want a good price. It doesn't matter that you're small or, you know, still trying out. So it is a basket of things. So I only spoke about things in context to this workshop. Yeah. Racism. I felt it in so many different corners, but in particular to the person that was servicing me as the person responsible at this DFI. I'll make one typical example which might not sound, so I went to a meeting to meet this person, in January. So I am very particular about branding and presentation, and so I came in wearing an Ezulwini jacket, which was well branded, and that jacket was actually paid for by Suzanne at Pick and Pay. So the branding and packaging was paid for by, and this was after they'd approved funding. And so she, and I came to the meeting, and she looked at me like this, and she says, "So, new jacket." And you know, the painful thing about racism is that it's not tangible. It's felt, but it's real. It's one of those things that it's difficult to really explain it. But I felt it. I presented my support team, which was outside people, I mean, NBA level people, CAs, which happened to be black, but this person refused to work with them. So those are the things that, you know, sometimes the worst thing about racism is that you can't touch it, you can feel it. Yeah.
I don't have a question. I have two observations to make. In your presentation, you are talking about that you did not look at the value chain. And in my view, that was supposed to be one of the assistance that you were supposed to get when you are applying for funding. The person who was processing your application should have looked at your application and asked you a question as to who your raw material supplier was going to be and how you were going to be assisted, or how the raw material supplier was going to be assisted in order to continuously provide you with the raw material. You see, in marketing, is the inner circle of marketing, which is called the controllable sectors of marketing. It's the price, it's the product that you said you were going to make, which was chocolate. It is the place where you were going to make that chocolate and where you were going to deliver that chocolate. It is the price that you were going to charge for the chocolate, and it is the promotion, how you were going to promote the product. Those are four pieces of marketing. That is the inner circle, controllable. You can control that because it's you. But outside, the outside circle that circles you are the uncontrollable sectors of marketing. And but they have a big effect on your business. And what are those? One, this is the raw material supply, where you are going to get the raw material from. So if CIFA and CIDA are providing you with services, one of the non-financial support services was to examine that outer circle, which is the raw material supply, the policies of the country, the culture, the politics, all these things that are the outer circle. It is what you are supposed to be looked at. And then, when we talk about holding your hand, it is that intervention that they had to make to then hold your hand and set the outer circle for you, because they are DFIs and they have a sister organization that is CIDA. So if in any of the trainings that were given to you, you are not assisted to understand the marketing mix, controllable and uncontrollable sectors of marketing, you are not assisted. You are not going to survive. That is the first observation that I'm making. So, if then there wasn't that, the second issue that you are making is the insufficient funding. The minute you give funds to a business that are not enough for the business to establish itself. You have killed it. It's better not to give any funds because you are actually putting that person into debt and you are also raising false expectations and you are also creating a problem between this person and the client because you are going to go to Pick and Pay and say you have been funded when in actual fact you have not been given sufficient funding. And Pick and Pay is going to expect you to deliver on the demand that they want. And Pick and Pay is not the end consumer. Pick and Pay is buying that because there are customers that want to buy from Pick and Pay. So the retail sector is not actually the customer. The customer is the end user of chocolate. And the moment that customer enters Pick and Pay and doesn't find that chocolate, Pick and Pay also is dead in terms of business. So that is the understanding of the value chain. And if that is not understood by the DFI, then there is no small business that will prosper in this country. Thank you for that presentation.
Okay.
So those are the two gaps that I have identified from this presentation.
On that note, thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, honourable members, I would like to cut this particular discussion and move on to our next presenter on the program. Thank you very much, Ms. Nontwentle Mthunu-Matungwane, and for your contribution. I would like then to call on our next SME, Rise Uniform, to also provide their own perspective and their own experiences. Call on the podium Ms. Ntombi Nonyuba, Managing Director of Rise Uniform.
Thank you. It's just a minute.
Good evening, everyone. Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ntombi Nonyuba, Director and owner of Rise Uniforms. Just a quick background. Rise Uniform is a brand name that we use, but our name is Phakamile Industries. That's a legal name. It's 100% owned by me, who's a black female. It was in operation 2007. I've been in the clothing industry since I was born. My mother was a dressmaker. But formerly in the industry, I've been in the industry for the past 14 years. I worked as a production manager and as a technology advisor under PIA, Technology Innovation Agency, in clothing and textile, I was a technology advisor. And next, my education, I got a master's degree in quality technology and BTEC degree in quality, national diploma in clothing management, a certificate in project management as a course certificate. Past project while I was still working for TIA, technology station, we had a project with TIA in the Western Cape Economic Development where we assisted 10 SMEs. The project was an innovation project and Ugu Economic Development, which is in Potchefstroom, where I did 5 cooperatives in skill development and we did in Limpopo Economic Development Agency, where we did 20 SMEs cooperative skills development and Cedar Technology since 2010 to 2011. I was conducting for them a gap analysis on their clothing and textile project on SMEs and cooperatives. The background that I've just given about myself and where I worked, it actually informed me giving born to Rise. The challenges that I came across with, they actually make me to realize that I don't belong in the corporate sector. Rise Uniforms, Rise is actually my business name, Phakamile. You need to get up. There was a gap that I couldn't ignore. And I told myself, no matter how small it is, I will make a difference. I wish stands for respect, which is what I command within my employees and wherever I go. Research, well-informed research, which is what I had an opportunity of being on a ground level, working with cooperatives, working with SMEs in my sector. So when I started to think about RISE, then all that came together. And I had an opportunity of traveling annually to overseas, Germany, Italy, London, to meet different businesses and conduct research in different businesses during my time with TIA, which I'm grateful for it, because at least I was armed. And inspiration and innovation, we try to do things differently. I try to inspire my community where I am. Support, we all know that when you empower people, you need support, you need to support them, you need to be there for them. You cannot say you empower if there is no support. That is what we stand for. Rising Funds, we currently in Teguka Business Park, occupying 153 meter square. We've got branding facility and production manufacturing facility. Everything we do, it's in-house, starting from design, patterns, branding, everything, manufacturing, until we deliver to client. The current staff complement, we have a sales administrator, which we just employed 3 months back. I was doing that job myself. And we have a production manager that is starting next month. That one I was also doing myself for the past years. And we have a production supervisor, which also comes out of my hands, digitizer. Just a slide backwards a little bit to the previous slide. That lady was a cleaner in our hotel with a matric. Knowing nothing about computers. When we got that piece of equipment, which I will tell you a story about it, it's a $500,000 equipment. It's equipment that I cannot afford to work without. And I've taken that lady, I've trained the basic computer skills. Today she's a digitizer and she's running my branding division. I'm proud of. We've got currently on our floor 13 machinists, a quality controller, a cutter, and we've got cooperatives that we work with outside our premises because we've got a limited space that's got 7 ladies. Yeah, 2012 we trained 10 ladies because RISE is about empowerment, and the area where we are, we don't have qualified machinists. And what I've observed while I was still working is that the people being trained sewing, the standards are really not up to scratch. And if I really wanted to create a viable business that is sustainable, that can actually make difference in South Africa, I had to start back by training them. That was in 2012 and I was still working. So I had to ask one of my previous intern at CPUK when the contract ended to actually that we get a 10 ladies that we can actually start training. That time I was still working, so she was running that for me, but we could only employ five of them. In 2013 we trained again, but in this time, because I resigned from my job in 2012, end of 2012. I joined the company full-time. We took again another 10 to train. And yes, we could employ 10 people. But the 5 again was not employed. We employed another, just 5. That is when I went to market Pick and Pay, because my pension was really getting dry. And I couldn't do it on my own anymore. I went to them and I asked them to assist me. That I'm training and this is what I want to do. This is my company, because I was already running. I already had some customers doing schoolwear and all that. And yeah, our relationship started that day. Then in 2014, we went down on training, and then currently we've got 18 employees in total, and the corporate that I talked about. So ever since we started with my business, we empower 25 women, and in total employment to date is also 25 employees, including the outside people. The in-house training that we conduct, in 2013, unfortunately, I couldn't get the funding from Pick n Pay, but we looked at the other way around. We then started collecting posters which they use in the clothing stores that they advertised on. I go and collect them at the head office, they collect them nationally, and then we take them back to the factory, we cut them, we make bags. When they have functions and promotion, when they open new stores, they use those bags. That is what we use currently to train. I sell the bags back to them. They must pay for it. That is what sustains our training facility. The product that we are currently doing a pick at at Rising Farms, we do active wear and school wear and corporate wear. And on the corporate wear, we've got Pick n Pay and we've got Mr. Delivery. That is just our client base. We've got about 60% of our sales comes from corporate, and 20% of our sales come from schools, public sector, and 20% comes from churches and those groups. Yes, ma'am. About that equipment, we applied for CEDA in 2011. We got approved in 2012, and we got a funding of 600,000 worth of equipment. That actually made a huge difference in our business, because now we stopped outsourcing our branding. We did the branding in-house. And we also received a funding from Western Cape Economic Development of 80,000 for our marketing material. We then also got the support from Pick n Pay, which is Enterprise Development, not Foundation. They used to be Foundation. We got currently, which is last year, May, we got a 5-year contract with a 24-month probation period for staff uniform. I think all of you, some of you have seen, I don't know. Pick n Pay started last year, opening stores which are called Pick n Pay Local. We are the sole supplier of uniforms in that store. They are looking in 5 years to open about 300 stores nationwide. So far, we opened with Pick n Pay already 10 stores, which we are the only supplier of those uniforms. And also from Pick n Pay, we got a 250,000 cash injection for raw materials and stock. And I've already mentioned the recycling project, and we've got on an ongoing basis, monthly, they meet with me, the enterprise development, to actually look at the business, the strategy, the cash flow, what is happening. So that's a relationship that we've got. That's a range that we give to Pick n Pay. The challenges that we've experienced, the cash flow. When we got the contract at Pick n Pay, one thing, cash flow was a problem, but immediately after I was told in May that we have won the contract, I then applied to one of the two DFIs. I will talk about that later. And the second challenge was capacity constraints, because now I needed to grow very fast and at a pace that to keep my clients that I had all the time, and to also accommodate the contract that I just received from Pick n Pay. And the third challenge was a limited space that we've got, because 153 square meters was not enough anymore. Funding. 2013, I approached CIFA because I was saying, okay, I've got these customers, and we were at that time not having a contract, but working with responding to requests for quotes. So we worked, we got some sales from public sector and the schools, and with all the database that I actually gave them. But unfortunately, my application that time was unsuccessful. The reason was no contract in place. My question was, what does, because the few SMEs who actually get contracts at their early stage, then where must they go? 2014, when I received contracts from Pick and Pay, I went back to CIFA, because the reason that year I didn't have a contract in place. My application again was unsuccessful. After 3 months, I got the feedback that my application was unsuccessful, but my problem was then the turnaround time, because I've applied for a gap funding, for a bridging fund, just for me to be able to supply the 3 stores of Pick and Pay that we had to do within the next following month. And I was specific, and I needed only, and that one was just for me, for raw material, nothing else. And everything else, I was going to fund it myself or find a way to actually, I just needed 150,000 revolving loan. It was unsuccessful, and I received an email and saying, okay, or when I called, the project or whatever advisor said to me, Antumbi, we need to meet. I said, okay, when can we meet? Okay, my son is got a pneumonia and whatever, we will meet. Then a weekend and another, and when she came back, I said, when can we meet? And I suspected, I said, okay, my application is unsuccessful. And she said, yes. I said, okay, can you just email me a document stating why my application is successful? Because I don't think it's worth us, me leaving everything I'm doing. Because remember, I just got a contract and I needed to make sure that everything is running. And if my application is unsuccessful, I need to go somewhere where I can get funds. So you can, in the meantime, email me, because I don't have time to now meet you. I need to make alternative plans. I then had to go back to Pick and Pay, because it meant that if I'm not honest with Pick and Pay, I will lose this contract. And I cannot afford to lose this contract. I've got employees that look after me. I went back to Pick and Pay. I played my cards open. And luckily, the first and the second stores we did with the little funds we had, yes, my employees, the first month we supplied that contract, I had to pay them late because we had to wait for the payment from Pick and Pay, because we took everything to make sure, just to show them what I wanted I could deliver, but my problem funds. So when I went to them, they could listen to me, because they've seen that we can do it. And I've sent them all the correspondence, and I've been keeping them on the loop, so I said, I need this contract. My employees need this contract. I don't know where to go, and I don't know what to do. And in that time, we applied as well for the PPI funding, which is incubation fund, because with RISE, I was looking at that I'm just going to be focusing on the marketing and the technical aspect, but I need to take people with me, because if I'm approaching the Pick and Pay, the government sector for tenders and everything, we need to increase the capacity of what we do. Therefore, I'm not looking at employing all those people that we required, but I need to take cooperatives with me, because I've worked with cooperatives. and I've seen the gaps. That is when we actually also approached the TTI. So I've indicated and I showed as well that in the previous slide that we got the 250,000 from Pick n Pay. That is why you see a cash injection of 350. It was not by choice, it was by force. Luckily, they were willing to help me. And on top of that, now when Mentor is presenting and saying thank you to God, I didn't get that 150,000. Because with that 150,000 I've got from Pick n Pay, I didn't pay it for 6 months, I've paid it afterwards. After 6 months, they gave me a gap of actually, I don't know what they were calling financial terms, but I then started paying it afterwards. And also, with no interest, only at the administration fee. So in total, I'm out of 250, I'm paying 360 back. And 6 months with no payment. Yes. So that was, I was just going to talk about the incubation. So the incubation, on the incubation we actually requested for that amount. I've indicated, and then we got a rejection also. Lack of guaranteed market while I had a contract. Lack of care exit strategy and method of contribution not acceptable. It is stated 40% from an employee and it's not supposed to be cash really. The last one. The last, this is just identified challenges that I've went through, and that caused me to actually look for a funding for incubation, because I thought the incubation with what I want to do is actually the relevant fund for me. What I would like to actually state in this forum is, I think it's important that whether maybe the small business department is going to do that. If an SME is approaching a particular DFI, it is quickly screened, that application, is it relevant for this fund? Or should we transfer to another fund? So that the decision can be taken very quick, not after 6 months, not after delays, not after 100 documents have been submitted, just to get that fund. And then you get a rejection. And then only then you are being told that no, you should have went to a certain fund. Okay. You can go. It's, I don't have time for that one. Now the question is the available funding institutions relevant to SMEs? Yes, they are. Otherwise, you wouldn't be flooded with application forms. Can we create those 11 million jobs in 2030? Sorry for the 2017. Yes, it can be done. Because the jobs are created without funding. 25 people being employed with no funding, then it means it's doable. Is 30% public sector procurement SMEs achievable? Yes, it is achievable. But let's look at the gap. Because I didn't get a funding for my incubation and to respond to the capacity that is required from me and to the order that I've got and the client service that I've got, I had to stop with tendering or requesting for quote. Because I've got a contract that I need to pay this, and the capacity that I've got is limited, and my funds are limited. Meaning that, cannot expect the private sector to provide access to market and fund. It's impossible. I'm one of the lucky ones. I don't think it's doable. That is why I appreciate the 350 they gave me. Another slide. The roadblock on the road. Lengthy and complicated application process. When I was applying at CIFA, it made me wonder. Because I looked at what the department is supposed to be doing, the PFI is supposed to be servicing, the kind of people, the level of education of the people that they're supposed to be servicing. And I looked at the application forms. I got a horror. I was horrified. Because that, I said so to the person who was dealing with me. I'm educated, but this, I don't think it's called for. Lack of equitable access to government funding. There's enough funds to move South Africa forward. But the lacking is access to that fund. Whether it's because of the red tape that the people who are sitting behind those desks making the decisions are so scared to move that when the time comes where they're supposed to actually give reports, we're going to be asked X, Y, Z question, but it's killing South Africa. The money will stay in those banks. The cash flow, the top to deal with public service, one of the reasons that made me to stop doing any request for quote or responding to tender, because I've actually did it with SASA, some of the name organizations that I was working with, on the school program, and the payment, to wait for payment for such a long time, was not nice. I then decided my company doesn't need this. I'm going to just hang on until I've got enough funds. I'm coming to an end. Just rising from way forward, we have a contract with Pick and Pay. Luckily for us, we have a wish goes. And so far, we've done 10 stores, and there's 290 stores to go for the next 3 years. We do need a fixed space and the machinery to grow, because one line of main space, because we do make everything inside except for cheeses, it actually requires about 2 million just to set up that one machine that put a profit on a call at about 700,000. A setup cost of 800,000 and working capital injection of 2.5. Estimated total cost is 8.2. And I know this time is a dream, and I don't know when and where I will get that fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tombi, for that quite interesting presentation. Although you've chowed my time, for lack of a better word, I would now, it was quite interesting also looking at Ntombi's presentation to pick up that not that she's an entrepreneur, she's also got the background, she's got the qualification to support the business that she, and drive the business that she's in, and also besides job creation, and also she provides training, and also working with corporates. And quite interesting, we're also looking at her presentation, it's the innovativeness in making sure that she takes her business forward, and the drive that she has in making sure that the business succeeds. I think it's a caliber of entrepreneurs that we in South Africa that we strive to grow and nature. That these are the entrepreneurs that we need to provide support for. And also looking at the challenges, the fact that it's also it you can start to draw a trend from Nontwenhle presentation. It also talks to the lack of funding, time wasted in application process, only to find out right at the end that you are not in the right department. You need to be directed in a different department after being stripped, for lack of a better word, also, and also payment delays. It's one of the main issues that's actually coming out strongly. And on that note, honourable members, colleagues, and visitors, I would like to open up the floor, starting with honourable member Opatezin said, and also honourable Marshall right at the back, and November.
If I may ask, because what we're trying to do here is to get lunch at 1 o'clock, I will take another presentation after this engagement, so then we can have lunch at 1 o'clock, then we come back for the rest of the presentation, and then I'll take another member, if we could just straight to the point and be very brief.
Thank you, Tommy. Where are you? There you are. Yes, so just imagine that we are in an episode of Dragon's Den, right? And I'm an investor. So you want $8.5 million. What's the repayment period? How long would it take to get that money back? And will you be prepared to part with some equity in your business to get that money? And if so, how much equity?
One, I have a client, and I believe I have a sustainable business. When I look at my client, it's not a touch and go. And looking at the funding that we are looking at, is actually to respond on the demand of the orders that we will be also having in the future, not only for them. As I've said, that I had to stop responding to requests for quote or anything else, just to make sure that my capacity is enough for them. I'm looking at, if you're looking at 8 million, that can be repaid in 5 years' time, I believe. And looking at, really I haven't thought about allowing someone or an organization to take an equity in my business, because at this stage, I would like to see it grow to where I want it, to where I believe, so that if anyone comes in, can then, because I'm scared of the pressure of someone looking just at the bottom line of my business. And that's the only fear that I've got. I know from my side it's all about giving back to that business and growing it to the level I want it to be. So if I'm scared of an investor coming in and say, but this month, not that I don't want to be, I don't want to be questioned with the thing that I'm actually doing in my business and where it's going, but necessarily I don't want someone whose interest is only to see the bottom line. Because at this stage I'm still growing it. So at a later stage, yes, I can.
Chairperson, before I ask my question, I need to say I'm glad that the minister is here to hear for herself how some officials are frustrating small businesses. But then my first question is that in 2014, Ndombi said that DTI turned down her application because of lack of guaranteed market. I want clarity on that. What does that mean? Did you show them your customers or your clientele, and that your method of contribution was not accepted? What did they mean by that? And the second one, CIFA also did not approve your application for bridging finance of 150,000, and reasons were apparently not given. Did you insist on getting reasons why your application was unsuccessful?
I will start with the CIFA one and go back to the incubator one. One, reasons were not given because I didn't make it to the meeting. The meeting was delayed for about 2 weeks, to and fro. And I'm a person who actually believes in moving on and doing what's best for me. If I see it doesn't work, because if they didn't find me, they declined my application, that was not going to change the fact that the application was declined. And at that time, I needed to respond to my client.
And the best interest for me was to get funds as quick as I can. So the meeting, what was important for me, was to actually get a meeting with someone who's going to solve my problem. Because with FIFA, they couldn't solve my problem at that time. Therefore, that meeting was irrelevant for me. I requested for a meeting, for a email instead of a meeting, so that I can actually get the liberty to read the email, the document, and then if I see those areas where I need to improve or I need to go back to them, then I could. So if that couldn't come up front before then we can actually set up a meeting, there was no reason for me. So then therefore, the reasons I'm saying are unknown because I did not go for the meeting because it was too late for me. And with the incubator funding, we actually applied for it even before we had the contract. It was already on the stage. When we got the contract, we were already assessed. The PTI officials were in my business. They conducted the on-site visit. They were happy. They went back to present the technical committee. It was submitted. It passed. The time when we were responding to Pick and Pay contract digging, I was confident because when they asked me, told me your capacity, I said my application, our application with the DTI for so much money for expansion, this is what we are looking at the next 5 years, and we already passed the technical committee. We are now heading for the judicial committee. But unfortunately, I counted my chickens before. So when the letter came and said they were rejecting us because of non-guaranteed market, we already, even then, submitted, before the judicial committee date, we submitted the contract also from Pick and Pay. They then also contacted Pick and Pay to actually find out about the market after when we, because we have appealed the decision that was taken. I've responded, I've sent, I actually flew from Cape Town to Joburg, thinking that I will actually meet with the committee and present the model of the business and make them understand why we need this funding. But unfortunately, I still met with the officials. Okay, fine. They said they will take it up to the committee. We came back, and when it was supposed to be resubmitted to the committee, I then got a call from now someone who is saying, your project has been moved to me. And now, who are you? I am so-and-so. I am the new project, whatever. And I said, okay. So I'm looking at the documentation. I'm going to all your things. I said, okay. And then he came back with another set of requirements, completely out of the reasons my application was rejected for. Because I thought we needed to respond to those and rectify whatever that was needed, where there was a gap. But then, to my surprise, he still went back again to the things, because I had to pay for an outside auditor to come and audit my business. That had to come up for my money, for my pocket. But to my surprise, he told me that person is not accredited. And I said, but why this was not picked up in the first place? So, and I need to pay again. I said to him, listen, I appreciate your effort and what you've done, but I think if DTI had interest at all in funding me or seen any value in what I'm doing, I could have been funded by now. But it's a little too late. I don't think I have an energy or resources to put into this.
again. If it happens that I do go on with this incubation in my own small way, whatever I'm doing, I will do it, but I am not wasting my time again. Because if you cannot fund this, then I don't know what you can fund. There's a client to contact. There's clients to contact. You've done that. They've written letters to you. I don't know what is left, but unfortunately, I must thank you for your services. That is when it ended.
Thank you.
Thank you, John, for that answer.
Honor of November.
Honor of November.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Ntombi, for the wonderful presentation. It makes one to feel very much happy to see that young people are coming up this way, especially young women. But there is just one favorite question of mine. It's about the training part. Because training needs money. It cannot just be a free training. There is money involved. So my small question, or my small sort of input, is that whenever you are doing your trainings, or as you are going forth, you will be busy with trainings right through. Did you approach any of the departments? Because I believe that one of the departments that is really good money for training is your Department of Labor. Did you approach any of those departments so that they could help with your training? I thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Before you respond, because my question also relates to that, the Africans, did any of the CETA fund your training program? Because I see in your approach, a development approach, because you start by training people, and then your training guarantees them jobs, because you say we will train you on these skills, and you will then work in my company. But I also see a further development, because out of the 25 that you employ, you are then saying, let us develop others. They are not going to be part of this company, but we are going to work with them. It's 7 members of the cooperative. And in my view, if I was sitting in a board of CETA, I was going to fund that initiative. In actual fact, if I was in BTI, I was going to take you by your hand, go to a CETA and say, let us form a partnership. You provide her with the training fees, and we are going to provide her with whatever assistance, because we can see that her target market is unemployed people, unskilled people. She is imparting that knowledge, but also she has identified a sustainable market. Uniforms, school uniforms, is a sustainable market. That's where I started. I started in a corporate. I started in sales house. I was in school wear promotion. And from sales house, I worked in a cooperative that was producing school uniform. Google is also in cooperative. It's a sustainable market. There's no child that goes to school without a uniform. Pick and pay. This is what Suzanne said to us. Suzanne said, we gave her few shops with a view of expanding and giving her more other shops. And your model was already saying, you are not thinking only of yourself. If it is other shops in other provinces, because you have started a cooperative that you are linking to yourself, you are then saying other women also, other unemployed people can also start becoming part of this value chain. But you will ensure that there is quality control and you open the market opportunities for them. Now, what did they do when they said they can't fund
you, did they take you to another department of government that could have helped you? Did SIPA take you to SIDA for SIDA to sort out the non-financial support that was required, to sort out whatever was lacking in your business plan?
My background, working with a cooperative as a technology advisor for CPUT, I had experience in working with SITA. I applied for funding in 2010, not for my business, because I was still employed, but under TIA, under the Clothing and Textile Technology Station, we were going to train 10 cooperatives in Cape Town. That fund was approved in 2012, in 2011, late 2011. I left CPUT 2013 February, and still the money was never transferred, or the training going forward, nothing happened. SITA, when I started with my business, I knew is the last door I will go and knock on. Department of Labor, I've never contacted them. I never, not that there was anything or I had an experience in working with them, I never approached them. SIFA transferring me to another department that can assist, I think if there was any opportunity of that, that could have happened in terms of, and don't be, we called you on Tony, how is your business doing now? And we've got that document, remember, that we still need to discuss with you. And we think you are not relevant for this fund. Maybe you are relevant for that fund. Because they are fund, I knocked on their door even before I had the contract. So maybe the 150 I was looking for was too steep, I don't know. The contract I had was not suitable for the application, I don't know. But maybe in my personality that's an area that I need to work on. I kind of, if it doesn't work, I accept and move on. Because I get scared of wasting my time on things that don't work. I rather move and find an alternative and still achieve what I want to achieve. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ntombinyuba, for that for the responses they've provided. Honorable Minister, honorable members and colleagues, stakeholders, we will try to squeeze another presentation now before our lunch break. I am targeting that we have our lunch break at 12:15, so the next one is sort of, 18:15, quarter past one. Okay, so the next presentation is Green Valley Eggs. Mr. Musa Khomo, Director of Green Value Ads. If you can please come to the podium, please, for 15 minutes and allow for another 15 minutes to have clarification questions, then soon after that we can have a break.
My presentation
does not have a lot of photos on it, so I thought I would make up by changing quickly. And yeah. Yeah. I'd like to quit the house, Mingereluma, the whole house, all protocols observed, Kamadam Musakomo, parade from Queen's Valley Eggs, KZN South Coast, Nasum Kumas. Who we are. I'm going to be very brief. Queen's Valley Eggs, which has been. Queen's Valley Eggs is a farming business. Our core business is production of eggs, obviously, with 50% youth, 60% women, 17% disabled. That's the composition of the members of Queen's Valley Eggs. We started off, we registered in 2006, and when we started our engagement as a CC back then, to go into entrepreneurship. And in 2012, we acquired a piece of land, a 1 hectare piece of land, where we would expand our business. We started off with 20 layers. Layers would be the chickens that lay eggs, so I may be referring to them as layers or birds, if you want to say. We were selling to local truck shops, and customers were buying, walking customers were operating from our house. Packaging materials we were getting from PMB, so I will take a taxi from Mkomas, Eshlamandau, and to Durban, connect from Durban to the taxi rank of Pietermaritzburg in Durban, and go to Pietermaritzburg to carry the packaging material in a taxi. Those are the egg trays, and bring them the whole way down again. In 2012, we engaged the Department of Agriculture. They really loved what we were doing. They visited our site, saw our chickens, how we're doing, and the whole initiative was very nice. We were visited by a couple of senior officials in the Provincial Department of Agriculture, but then Mr. Strauss, then Acting HOD and a couple of other senior officials. They loved what we were doing. And they promised us a turnkey project, so they said get a proper piece of land which is outside the residential area, because we started off as a residential area. Thus, we got 1 hectare piece of land, which was what we could manage to get due to lack of access to land. Then funding was initiated in 2012, site leveling was done. That site still stands today with only poles on it. You will see in the pictures later on. From 2012. Let's go. Department promised us a 4,000 layer facility, but there's been extreme delays, as I said, up to now. It's just still the poles standing on the site that has been leveled since 2012. There has been quite a challenge with dealing with the officials of the particular department. The vision of food security, I think, was too much engraved in them. So when you speak about commercial business, you're just not on the same page. You speak big and they want to push you to small things. For example, right now, what we've been arguing about, and I've raised this even to the MP Babukala, is that they are building a broiler house for layers. The broiler house is a house for the chickens, the meat chickens. So it's completely different. So they're saying they're using them interchangeably. So it's a challenge for me. It's been a big fight. We're still fighting that. But now, because of funding, you know, you have to deal with what you can access. If I had the money, then I would have just bought what is right, because I had a proper plan that was done. Business plan was funded by the NYDA after some fights and proper consultation with the poultry experts. They had a design for me, but it was not implemented. The department wanted to use their standard structure of stays. As a result, our business was growing. We continued marketing the business, getting more clientele. So now we're told to move from our original site to a new site, the one that's been leveled now, and then the implementation is not happening. So demand for the eggs was very strong, there were referrals where we are, it's, there is a lack of supply, and there is a gap market that is not being serviced by the other commercial suppliers, the big names. So we ended up having to buy eggs from the big guys to supply to our customers, because we didn't have the capacity and we didn't have the funds to set up a layer facility to supply our clientele. We are now buying eggs from, I don't know if I should mention the names of the, maybe not, of the commercial farms, white commercial farms. We get the eggs from them using a small vehicle that my brother, belongs to my brother, so I use it for delivering eggs. I pack the boxes in there, and you can only take 8 boxes. So when you service a client, you have to go to the farm from Ugu district, go to Mukungudlovu district, the farm, or the farm in Harwick, and then pack 8 boxes, deliver, go back again up and down to complete the order. Fuel consumption, additional expenses. We are currently having our main contract is with FedEx. We're visited by the FedEx National Management, actually the National Manager for Trevor Foundation, which is under FedEx, Ms. Tombe and Sue Glenville. They visited our site where we were originally operating. They loved what we were doing. They said, look, we give you guys a contract to supply us, to start you off with the fuel sites. We've been servicing that, buying the eggs. So currently under FedEx we do. We're doing the 10 sites, including sites in PMB, PMB private, Mediclinic private hospitals, the college DUT at Riverside, Nestle, where the people go and eat at Nestle, the canteen at Nestle, and a couple of other sites. We also have a contract with PCK, which we got by pushing for preferential procurement to the Department of Health. So they said, look, after a long struggle, then they said, look, we have PCK who holds a contract to supply hospitals at provincial level. So we approached them and said, look, we are youth, we're trying out, and we'd like to have an opportunity to supply, particularly now that they were servicing the government institutions, which I think was then a market that should be reserved for us, because we cannot compete with the big guys in supplying the big names the big cheap retail stores, the big chain stores. So perhaps if government market was there for us, would then present us with an opportunity to have a market. Because then the only way you can have a business, is informed by the availability of a market. So we're doing PCK, we're doing a couple of public hospitals under them. PCK is also supplying restaurants. They said, look, we'll open up market for you. They received us well. There's letters saying that they want to accommodate us and grow our business. Let's go. Yes, challenges now, core challenge is the profit margin. Because we are not supplying our own produce, then the profit margin, we are buying eggs, which we are reselling. We've become entrepreneurs now, in a way. So then the profit margins are very limited. So it is a challenge. Then most of the times we actually have to work from the pocket. You're hardly breaking even. And because of the fact that I said even earlier before that transportation, fuel costs, you end up going to your pocket. But what we have done, however, is we've maintained the market. And in fact, FedEx is opening up new sites for us. And there are referrals. We're actually replacing replacing other commercial suppliers. We're servicing certain sites because of the service that we provide. You know, the big guys, maybe start, we deliver on Wednesday and that's it. So with us, we're able to say, let's negotiate it. If you have emergency orders that you need delivered, we accommodate for that. I think it's one of the advantages of having a small business. You're able to interact directly. And accommodate each other with customers and vice versa. Yeah, I've mentioned the transportation problem. So if we had a truck, as I said, then we'd be able to deliver to a site in one load, less fuel expenses. And we go. Okay, there's a brighter side. I've just mentioned that we're doing good service, and we are being referred. The companies are talking to each other and saying, look, take these guys on, they're doing quite a good job. And obviously they have no idea of the struggle that we have behind. Because what we make sure is that what comes to their doorstep is the product is there, it's on time, every order on time. If there's ever going to be any change, they inform well beforehand. And thus far, we've never had a situation where we deliver late or don't deliver. It's either if there's a change, we deliver earlier and inform them that, look, your order is supposed to come on Wednesday. Can we deliver to you on Tuesday? So now, because of that, then they refer to other companies, and it becomes a challenge to us because they don't understand it. How much struggle we go to bring them that service to your doorstep. They assume like the commercial suppliers, everything's smooth, trucks are in place, production is there, and overheads are well covered. But we are continually making sure that we market Green Valley Eggs in a very good manner, and it's been working very well thus far. As I said, referrals are coming in. Engagement with DFIs, NEF, we engaged NEF in 2012. Over quite a long period of time, then the application of the process in Durban Smart Exchange building and sent to Pretoria, I believe it is Pretoria or Joburg, or somewhere in Joburg where it has to be processed. And then for a long time we're not getting feedback, and at the end of fighting with the national office, then we received a letter saying that they don't find primary agriculture, please go and try land bank. Bama. So all along, we've been waiting. We're not told that they don't find primary agriculture. In fact, at certain meetings that I attended in Pretoria, when I raised this issue later on, they told that NEF does find primary agriculture, go back home in Durban and speak to them. And then they tell me something else. They said, no, we find a particular project in agriculture, but we don't find primary agriculture. And the issue of saying, go to land bank, instead, I think the issue was raised again. You should have then said, look, we have this project here. We've assessed them. These are the gaps. This is what we suggest should happen. Look at this application. So now our application, 200 document. Yeah, the printing one is very expensive when you print those pages in the business plan. So we are making these 200 documents to all the service providers. I wish to actually say to them, can you please post back that application so I can send it to Land Bank? Then you have to start a new process with Land Bank, but when you approach Land Bank, it was not going to happen. They wanted collateral and there was just too much, it just was not going to be viable. So we left that option. And then we moved on. Let's go. I see we approached IDC. Again, only find agro-processing, don't find primary agriculture. The ICC in the embassy building, speaking with the, or with someone from there. So I think it was quite discriminatory to the primary agriculture sector, because now we are saying we are going to fund agro-processing, which is the second, which is the first economy guys. The guys who are established, the guys at the abattoirs, for example, doing broilers, those are guys who have money. But now we are not funding the guy on the ground who's producing those chickens. We are not funding the people who actually need funding to actually start. I think developmental financial institutions should be developmental. And those are the people you need to speak to. Because the guy who owns Abattoir most likely is able to go to the bank and get a loan, and he's probably set up. So now the guys who are on the ground are the ones that are being left out. And we all know that agriculture is, there's no life without agriculture. Even our hoba outside here, you can rest assured that by this afternoon you would have eaten something. Otherwise, there's no life without agriculture. So I believe that the policy that CIFA, for example, says that they don't fund primary agriculture, only cash crops on condition of offtake agreement. So now, again, when you come to offtake agreements, agriculture is a rural setting a business, and there's a lot of exchanges that, and business in agriculture at a rural level. So now, I've been supplying eggs all over in the local tap shops, and which cannot provide me a contract the department or the DFI can phone and say, okay, you are a registered company of this nature, you are a blue chip company, there's a contract. These guys, they want eggs. I deal a lot with the foreign shops, truck shops. They're one of my better clients, actually. They're actually more responsive. So you can't get those contracts. So now you're saying even with veggies and stuff, the people that are trading at the informal level can never then access the funding of the DFIs because simply they don't meet the compliance that is required. Those offtake agreements, you cannot get them at the informal level, and even compliance documents that are required by DFIs are sometimes very impossible. For us, I mean, we had an export certificate, the customs code. We did that in 2008, looking at the opportunity of producing and selling free-range eggs to the export industry. You know, in 2012, I think it was in 2012, we were then stopped taking commercial eggs, which we call better eggs. They only do free-range eggs. And in Europe, they shifted from better eggs to free-range eggs. So we had that in mind. We had a certificate there for customs court in 2008 done to deal with that market. But due to access to land again and infrastructure, we could not do free range. We had to go for the option of the better eggs, which are chickens that stay in cages. It requires less land. 2 minutes. Okay. It's just that I'm very passionate about this thing. Let's page. Okay, just go to NIDA. When you go to NIDA, they tell you that capacity, there's no people, there's not enough capacity to actually do the applications. I think in case at the end, if the Durban branch is not the only branch that all the applications go to, there's very few others. I believe it's the only one at Smart Exchange. And then they say they don't find co-ops that are not 100% youth. So now next year, for example, I started this with Umshobomvu in 2006. And next year I'm going to be leaving the youth whatever level. And then which means from next year I'm not going to be qualified to deal with the NYDA. So we are saying, at least allow for a leeway of saying 20% of the people can be above, so we can carry our knowledge with the guys who are still much younger than us in NYDA to actually look, these are the lessons we've learned, and give us the opportunity. It shouldn't just be a cut that is 100%, if not 100%, it's a not. And then co-funding, NYDA does not do co-funding by policy. For example, we approached them, we had a quotation for 138,000 against to buy the eggs because of the demand. We had a cash flow problem. Customers paid 30 days after invoice, but they said they cannot fund us, even though we had the 38,000. In fact, more than 38,000, but they would not fund us because the quotation was above 100,000 and they stopped at 100,000. So they don't do co-funding. This directly works against the issue of partnerships. We are speaking about the different departments and stakeholders coming and working together, but you are saying we won't fund you because your quotation is over 100,000, no matter where you can get the difference and prove the difference of the money. So it's an issue that we think should be changed. Quickly, let's go. I'm out of time. And then the issue of compliance, from the three thresholds, the 10,000 individual, the 50,000 must be a company. I think we must have operated for 6 months, and 100,000 must have operated for a year. The requirement of the business plan, I think, should be still, there's a business plan template they use for the 10,000. If it's for the other levels, I think it should be allowed to use the same template. It's simple and it's relevant. But allow the business to grow, but don't then say punish it because now you are growing, then we're going to punish you and ask for these commercial business plans which are done by consultants are cut and paste, which half the time the people who present these business plans don't understand them. So allow the person to give a business plan which they understand, which speaks to them and speaks to the reality of their business. Maybe I'll skip other things because of time, but another important thing there on the slide, just previous to this one, is that the disbursement of funds, there should be a flexibility in disbursement of funds, because some of the inputs that we buy are not bought from a big shops which can offer you a quotation, formal quotation which you present in. For example, I was going and buying these packaging materials from a Muslim shop in PNP. They're not going to give you these quotations and all that. It's cashing, and they give you what you want. So NIDA, at some point, then visited my place, they saw what I was doing, I had applied for the 50,000, they later said, we'll give you 10,000, and that 10,000, then they said, we'll pay directly into coastal and farms, coastal farmers, which is commercial supplier for feed. But I said to them, look, I have the person I'm dealing with Cedar, who's done my branding, sorry, Cedar, who's done my branding, as can I buy through them, because you cannot buy coastal farm coastal farms in portions. If you pay, you pay once, you collect the feed. And when you speak about feed for chickens, you cannot keep feed for more than a month. You have to buy as per need. And then they refused. And I explained that to them. Look, I'd rather buy through this company, which is a formal company that deals with Cedar, it's a service provider for Cedar, and they refused, and they said, no, we want to pay the money directly to Coastal Farms. And they tried Coastal Farms, I said, right, then you contact them, because if you don't believe what I'm saying, they will not allow for you to take pieces in portions. You have to take all the stock, they don't store for you. They wrote later, it bounced. Later on, that approval was then reversed from NIDA, the 10,000 rand. It was a loss. So the issue of the way the fund is dispersed is the issue. Compliance, again, like even with NIDA right now, I'm reapplying again with NIDA. After I'd written to your office, Lama Muzulu, I got some responses. And then CIFA contacted me only to find that I had an application sitting with them for a long time. I had to renew those documents they had expired. The issue of management accounts, I mean, I'm not an accounting student. Even in school, I was a science student. By profession, I'm an engineer. Management accounts, even now, with NYDA, I'm still trying to figure out who an accountant is going to do my management account, because it's a requirement to apply there. So it's an issue. I have to go to find a consultant and pay the consultant 3,000 rand or 2.5, the cheapest I could get, to do those management accounts for me to go and apply. So now, the person on the ground is still starting off. How are they going to manage all these finance requirements? In my time. Yeah, I'll stop there. But can I just mention one more thing? The issue of markets, can it be really pushed? The issue of the 30%, if it can only be 30%, for SMMEs to supply government markets, because it is very important. As you said, they look for market guarantees. So now, if the government can give us the opportunity to supply it, and it gives us an opportunity to do business, and it also, because it's government and these are DFIs, there should be a link, the understanding. So that access to market is very, 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 very important. And I stop there. People maybe want to eat now.
Yeah.
I thank you.
Thank you, Musa. No, we can certainly see the passion that you have for your business. Honourable Minister and honourable members, one thing that we can pick up, and colleagues, one thing that we can pick up from the three young people that have come to do presentations today that you've actually seen, is that they are not sitting on their laurels, they are actually doing something. They are not asking for handouts. They are asking for our government to unlock. They're not really begging. They're actually doing something. They got off, they woke up in the morning, they are very innovative. They you can see, they get contacts, they get clientele to buy their product. And also, they are going into the businesses that very few of us can dare to actually venture into: agriculture, manufacturing, chocolate making, and clothing and textile. Really, I'm quite impressed with the kind of caliber of the people that have actually come up front here. And also, the challenges are all the same: lack of funding, delays in application, and time wasting in terms of your application being accepted and only being told that you're not in the right department, you need to go to another department. And also the funding instruments. It's another challenge. If you're starting out, where are you going to get collateral, like as a starting out business? I would like at this point in time to open up the floor for clarity seeking questions. And so then we can try and have lunch exactly at 13:30. And lunch will be served in the new wing. If you go out the door, you go on the right at 13:30. If you can just 10 minutes for clarity seeking questions. And another issue after that.
Thank you very much. thanks, Eunice, for that presentation. Clearly, I think you've made a lot of very good points in your presentation. I'm not going to deliberate on all of them, but one question is relating to the accounting side of things. I actually, one of the few points where I disagree with you is that every business has to have a set of accounts. You can't honestly call yourself a business if you don't have control over the money in your business. You may be a scientist or an engineer, but believe me, if you can't control the money coming into your business and going out, you're not going to succeed. So the question then becomes, how do you find ways of getting access to that resource which doesn't, you know, cost you a huge amount of money? And I think it's an issue which we need to look at as something vitally important. Because I come across countless businesses which are exactly the same as you, and they can't grow up to the point where they are sustainable unless they have the ability to produce a set of management accounts. So that's an issue that I think we need to have another look at. Case of your business.
I would want to comment on that and share my experience of a visit to Cuba. In 2001, I led the delegation to Cuba. At that time, I was the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Sport and Recreation. We came across a model that I think it could be applied in small business. In Cuba, every 120 families have got a team of government office services that are looking after 120 families. One of them is a doctor, another one is a nurse, another one is a social worker, another one is a physical trainer, another one is a nutritionist. And they said to us, because we have that system, there is no family out of the 120 that would give birth without us knowing that there is a child that is going to be born. There is also no family out of the 120 that would give birth to a child and will, that child will not start physical training on day 39. For us to be able to monitor the bone development of the child, the muscle development of the child, and the brain development of the child. And because we do that, our sports persons, because we went there for sports, are physically fit to be channeled into a particular sport. Because they get good nutrition because they're a nutritionist, they could get good exercise. They started, everyone in Cuba starts exercising on day 39 after birth. Now, let us look at the South African situation.
here are small businesses. They've got good ideas. Rondi is trained in business management. That is why she's able to do everything. Umtun has got the experience as a Kai, but no one assisted her to actually identify the uncontrollable factors and mitigate against that. Okomo, you say, you know, I'm an engineer, but I have a passion of this business. Let us take the South African situation. What was presented to us by State South Africa in terms of high rate of unemployment? One, many of unemployed people are young people that drop out of school before they reach matric. That is what State South Africa presented to us. Two, many of graduates struggle to find jobs. Let us take a situation now of Cuba. Here is Mkunu's business. It needs an accountant. There is a graduate accountant that is sitting somewhere without a job. Here is Mkunu. She wants a marketing person who is going to actually assist her with all that analysis of the controllable sectors and uncontrollable sectors of the marketing mix. There is a marketing graduate that is sitting somewhere, unemployed. Production management. There is a graduate sitting somewhere with those skills. So, Mkunu is saying, I don't have money to pay for consultants. Government has got learnership. There are graduates that some of them have been educated through NSFAS. They are sitting at home. Money has been invested in those. There are learnerships. You can take those people and plug them into a project. If we can take that model of Cuba and just plug it on small businesses, we can have this country moving forward. Because we have the resources, the young graduates are resources, they have the skills. The small businesses, they have the passion, they have the ideas, they don't have the skills, business management skills. Link the two and find a way of ensuring that you are either seconding those people, you use the leadership or you second, group them as service providers. You are killing two birds with one stone. High unemployment of graduates and high unemployment of people with business business ideas, but they don't have adequate business skills. So we are shooting with resources. All that we need is creative thinking on how to utilize those resources.
Musa, I'm not sure if you want to add anything on that. I think I'm covered, but I would say that I am currently studying the financials, which I did when I was applying at FIFA, the management account, to figure out how they are doing it. Just as I did with the business plan, since 2006, I figured it out. The business plan that I send out now, business plans that I've done by myself. So it's not that we're saying that's something we're not going to do in terms of getting to know the how to do management accounts. I'm very close to figuring it out as well as I did with the business plans. So we work on that.
Musa, you said in 2012 the Department of Agriculture started constructing a bed layer facility and until today it's incomplete. What reasons are they giving for the delays? And secondly, you lodged a complaint with the presidential hotline. Has this office investigated the reason for the delays? Are you getting communication from both the Department of Agriculture, and what are the reasons for the delays? And also the presidential hotline, is it investigating your case, and what are they saying to you? Thank you.
Maybe those photos that were running, you would see the site. She stopped them. You see the site, how it is even now. It's just our branding. That's the site. Okay, this is a truck delivering packaging material. That's the site now, of latest. It was in 2012. Funds, I've seen our project appearing in the IDC. It's not IDC, it's the municipal, this plenary thing is of this, it's not IDC, IDP. Yeah, plans appearing, our project has been appearing there to be funded, but we haven't seen any of the funding reaching us. We've been engaging the department since that time. We have no clarity as to why that project is not completed. Just some chicken houses from 2012 up to 2015 today. 4,000, it's not happening. As I said, I raised this, I made a report because there was a letter even issued that the funding has been issued. I made a complaint on the President Hall's line, I think in 2012, I did have it on the documents, and the reference number as well. And then again, I did follow up right up until 2014. Yeah, it's there. And I've been told that it's been attended to. But up to today, no one has called me to say, Musa, regarding the complaint you did, let's engage. So as to why the project is still incomplete up to today, it's gone through, I think, three HODs in the Department of Agriculture. And it's still incomplete, and it's still not been done the way that we wanted it to be done, to speak to our clientele. We have corporate clients. For example, the Pembe Medi Clinic, they want the eggs delivered twice a week because they won't keep eggs for the whole week because of biosecurity and pathogens and so on. So currently, and I want to say congrats to SIDA, who's funded our HACCP, the food and safety side of things. They are funding that. They also funded the branding. So now we have a situation where even HACCP is with the ISO standards, we are working on that. And yet, on the project itself, as I said, they're using a structure that is alternated between broilers and layers, which, you know, doesn't make sense. So there's this discord. But it is like that. I've raised complaints to all levels, but it is just like that.
Thank you, Musa, for the response. Okay, I think we've reached the time where we can break for lunch we can break for 30 minutes, so we can come back right in this venue at 1400. Thank you very much.